This podcast is brought to you by DKP & Co. Chartered Accountants. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to At Home with FNR.
Well, it's a period of transition in Australian football. Departures galore at both a broadcasting level and at a coaching level, with more opportunities than ever for young Australian coaches to come through the ranks and replace their foreign counterparts. We'll be getting all into the implications of the on and off field moves over the last few days, as well as taking a look at European football, where Real Madrid have this morning taken a maybe decisive lead in the La Liga title race. And Danny Ings has continued his ridiculous form in front of goal, making Liverpool fans wonder whether they made a mistake letting go of him those years ago. Josh Parrish and Ed Gooden filling in for Lachie Flanagan here on a Monday. And Ed, I noticed you've chosen a rather regal photo of the departed Simon Hill. He's gone from Fox Sports after so many years. I guess it's 15 years since the beginning of the A-League he's been there. And yeah, he will be sorely, sorely missed on our broadcasts.
I mean, you say regal photo as if not every photo of Simon Hill is regal, Josh. I think I can testify for everyone within the Australian footballing community that when we heard the news that Simon Hill was departing Fox Sports, it was a certain level of shock, because he's been an absolute mainstay within this generation of Australian football. You know, my first memory of him was, of course, 2006 or 2005, rather, with the qualification. And then going all throughout that, he's been the voice of every Socceroos moment, pretty much. So to hear that he'll be departing is... It feels like a changing of the guard, but it also feels like a changing of the guard in terms of Fox Sports making this feels like the decision now for them to say we're no longer that interested in Australian football, for me.
Well, if their actions to this point hadn't demonstrated that already, I mean, with all of the wrangling and the lowballing over the broadcast deal, and now it looking very, very unlikely that relationship will be extended beyond the end of next season, we thought it was already done. But the fact that Simon Hill only looks after the one sport hasn't counted in his favour. I think, you know, football experts in many media fields are in short supply at the moment. To lose another one is a death blow. I think Brendan Speed has kept his job because he is a multi-sport commentator. He does, you know, he does the rugby, he does the AFL, so they can keep him around and justify him being on the payroll. But if they're not looking to invest in football going forward, I guess it's a business decision that makes sense. But in the short term, I think their ratings will actually suffer. They have paid a bit for the A-League rights, even this renegotiated deal over the rest of this season and the whole of the next, and their ratings will suffer as a result of Simon Hill not being on the broadcasts. You flick it on and you don't hear his voice. It's just not the same gravitas. No. It's not dealt with the same respect. It's not researched as well, and it's just not as enjoyable a viewing and listening experience. So yeah, he's going to leave a hollow in our footballing lives, and I hope this isn't the end for him in Australian football. I think we've been very lucky to have him. He is one of the best in the business, not only in Australia, but worldwide. You know, I honestly think he is up there with the very best commentators. You know, maybe it's only Martin Tyler and Peter Drury who are, you know, ahead of him in his field worldwide at the moment. I listen to a lot of football broadcasts across the world from La Liga, Bundesliga, and there are very few commentators I would prefer to have than Simon Hill. So he could get his choice of employment across world football, I believe. He's got the right accent and he's got the expertise to be able to just slot in wherever. But I really hope that this isn't the last we see of him in the Australian game. I hope he finds a new employer forthwith, whether it's a return to his old home of SBS or maybe signing on with an Optus Sport if they're looking at broadcasting their own games. I really hope that this isn't the last we've heard from him. because, you know, we've just been so lucky to have him.
I mean, I think I think the accent example is why I think Simon Hill is so likable for every football fan around Australia, is that he's relatable no matter what background you're from. You can tell that he's Australian, but you can also tell that, you know, he's got a little bit of British in there as well. So you almost have a feeling of respect for the fact that he's talking about football in the way that he does. I think the way Fox Sports have handled this, I'd almost compare it to like a zoo. If you have, say each sport is an animal. Bear with me, Josh. If each sport is an animal, say soccer is a lion, rugby is a rhinoceros, and AFL is like a tiger. They want someone who can handle every single one of those things. But they're totally different beasts. They're totally different animals. If you want someone who can handle a rhinoceros perfectly, if you want someone who can handle football perfectly, you have to employ a rhinoceros trainer. And Simon Hill can only handle football, sure, but he's the best in the business at handling football. If you're trying to get people who can cover every single base, you're going to spread out the quality of their skills and spread out the quality of broadcast. And I think that's obvious for everyone to see, is that, sure, we can all talk about sport. You know, we could probably sit here and have a conversation about AFL, Josh, and we could be relatively convincing in our analysis. But who are we kidding? We have to be talking about soccer for us to actually have genuine opinions. Hmm. So if Fox Sports are trying to get, you know, every person on their staff to be able to cover every single sport, the quality of their journalism, like, I mean, let's be honest, it's already pretty poo-poo. If you like Fox Sports on Facebook, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
It's the Daily Mail, but for soccer at the moment.
Yeah.
What they've gone to.
But it shouldn't be like that, right? When you think of Fox Sports, you think of, you know, the Socceroos, and you think of the A-League, and you think of the fact that they're supporting Australian football. But now with the departure of Simon Hill and Foz and all these people, and I was actually having a conversation with Simon a few months ago when we had a little meeting with him, Josh, for the NPL and all those kind of things. And he mentioned some backroom staff as well that were departing. There was a guy who edited all of the like the footage together, and he put all the music together for the previews before the games. You know, these little 3 to 4 minute packages that summarized and gave context to what the game was about and gave it a real atmospheric feel and made you care about the game, even if you weren't 100% invested. And he was the first one to go, or one of the first people to go. And now Simon Hill's gone. It just feels like the end, Josh. It feels like the end for Fox Sports. But again, it opens up a window for someone else to come in and do the job that Fox Sports couldn't do.
Well, if FFA are talking about, you know, doing their own broadcasts and testing that market potentially for the FFA Cup next season, I'm not even sure how the broadcast arrangements work. They haven't been made public yet with Fox for the remainder of the deal, whether FFA are going to take over certain broadcasting responsibilities in terms of actually producing the content, and Fox is just going to rebroadcast it. That's a model that's been adopted by the NBL and many other sports, and it gives it gives football more autonomy over it. Obviously, it does come at a cost, but if they are going to do that, then I don't think there'd be a better person to bring in as a direct, you know, FFA employee than Simon Hill as a commentator. He's just so well respected, and he also always has time for everybody, which is amazing considering how busy he is and how much time he actually invests in researching. And then it was such a pleasure for us to be able to take in his wisdom at his seminar that he delivered for the NPL Victoria commentators a few months back. But it does seem like the writing was on the wall. I think that was part of the reason why he returned to Twitter, because he wanted to have an independent voice when, you know, Fox wasn't as keen on him voicing his opinions on the broadcast anymore, and they only wanted positivity around, you know, their Australian football broadcast, which is, you know, it's not journalism anymore.
When you have to force positivity, you know there's not a huge amount of positivity to talk about.
Exactly. Yeah. And you mentioned the other cuts from the background staff that we don't hear as much about, from Murray Shaw, who's the executive producer of the whole football department, who's long gone. So, you know, they haven't taken it seriously for a while. And I just hope that the A-League doesn't stagnate too much during the last year of this broadcast deal. Because I was, you know, came away from our discussion when we thought the whole thing was being dumped and, you know, Australian football was going independent or seeking a new broadcaster. I was slightly trepidatious, but also, you know, very excited about the possibility of taking it into our own hands and doing it justice for once. And now it's a temporary fix. It keeps the some of the money flowing, which is obviously a good thing in terms of, you know, the payroll for the A-League clubs. There would have been some serious belt tightening if that didn't happen. But also, it will stagnate because we know that Fox Sports aren't prioritising it. And across the whole kind of Murdoch media empire, they're not prioritising it. They've cut jobs everywhere. Let's not forget Tom Smithies, Val Migliaccio, Marco Monteverdi, who've all been stalwart reporters in their respective cities for years and years. Have all lost their jobs over the past few weeks. David Davutovic is gone from the Herald Sun, and
that was another huge that one was. I mean, we have, you know, connections with the Herald Sun, and we understand how good of a guy Dave is and how good at his job he is. And for, I mean, the fact they're just letting these people go, it's like a basketball team letting just LeBron James walk away because they no longer want to win. That's how it feels, honestly. They're giving away these talents.
Reinvest in their hockey team or something, you know?
Yeah, exactly. They're giving away these talents because they either don't see a future for football or they don't think that football deserves a high enough standard of coverage. And I think it's just a shame, Josh. But you mentioned the fact that it opens up some windows and opens up some doors for other broadcasters. Tell you what, how good would an all-star cast on Optus be of Simon Hill and co just leading the way for a new A-League? And when Fox Sports was kind of being a bit lax and being like determined to cut as many costs when it comes to the broadcast deal, I was so excited for them to no longer be a part of Australian football. I was so excited for someone else to step in and actually care about the game, because it feels like we're just farmers waiting for it to rain and Fox Sports is God deciding whether it rains or not. I want to be the one who decides when it rains, Josh, or at least have a more generous God.
Someone who actually responds to your ritualistic rain dances over the weekend.
Yes. Please, I've been dancing for years.
Well, we should talk about some of the other high-profile departures. I think we did mention Craig Foster leaving SBS last week, which I think is his choice. I mean, there have been a lot of cuts from public broadcasters recently, more so the ABC than SBS. But
Channel 31.
No, I think ever since, you know, this is my personal read on the situation. I think ever since he did not get the FFA chairman role, which was kind of his last ditch effort to actually have some influence and save football in this country, which, you know, he has the passion and vision to do, I felt. But he wasn't a popular candidate because he was such an intense reformist, and he, you know, we know Craig Foster can divide opinion at times with his opinions on the game. I thought that he would have been a fantastic appointment, but he was just too aggressive and too progressive in his will for change at FFA HQ and with the state federations, that, you know, he actually dropped out of the race before he could be not elected to the FFA board. And I think ever since then, my point being is that he is completely checked out of Australian football. He's given all he has to really give, and now he's got his target set on maybe more important things. Selfishly, I will rue his departure as a brilliant analyst and also an advocate for the game. But I think he's going to concentrate his efforts on, you know, saving refugees, maybe running for prime minister, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can only give so much. And when you put the amount of effort and the amount of time into achieving a goal and then you're not even given the chance to be considered, it's completely understandable that he's chosen to step away. He's almost the Bernie Sanders of Australian football, right? Like, he wants so much change, so much good change, that he almost scares people away with the fact that, you know, he wants to bring in all of these reforms and make a huge difference and all this kind of things. But people need to understand that change is naturally scary. Change isn't always going to be fun. It's not always going to be easy. There's going to be difficulties to face. But at least give change a chance, Josh. Let it have its go.
You're going to start singing John Lennon songs at this point.
Is that a John Lennon song?
All we are saying. No, anyway.
Imagine all the Fosters.
Well, I'm disappointed to see him go. I'm sad to see him go. And he's been, I think, one of the best football analysts on anywhere in Australia, and best sports analyst in terms of just his tactical breakdowns. He really, you know, influenced a lot of my football opinions. I watched him all the time on SBS growing up. You know, especially when the A-League was on SBS one game a week, that was the highlight of the week because you get a half-time and full-time Craig Foster breakdown in front of the tactics board and they'd have, you know, highlights packages really, really giving you a deeper understanding of what was actually going on the field, which you just haven't got from the main broadcaster, unfortunately. They've sort of been, I would say, dumbing it down a little bit over the years, focusing more on entertainment than education. And I like to learn something when I'm, you know, watching the supposed experts strut their stuff at halftime, and Foster really provided that. And, you know, he was a really passionate advocate for the game when it was, you know, not going in the right direction. I really wonder what it would have been like if he was FFA chairman. I think, you know, FFA has gone in a positive direction since the reforms, since they brought in James Johnson as CEO. I think there have been some movement on things, but I think it's going at a relatively glacial pace compared to what Foster was hoping to achieve. And he was also just incredibly charismatic. Obviously, as a TV presenter, maybe at that forum that we covered for FNR, the candidates forum, he was at an unfair advantage because he's got this kind of public speaking experience over some of the other board members or candidates, but he was clearly the people's favourite, and someone who had lived through decades and decades of you know, this stuff going in circles. And
he's essentially a war hero. He's a war hero of Australian football.
Yeah, now he's retiring as a veteran with a purple heart. You know.
Yes. Yeah. I think that. You talk about the public speaking and the charisma and all those kind of things. I think that is a hugely important part of what it means to lead the sport in this country. Is if you don't have the people behind you, if you don't have the people believing in you, whether that be through your charisma or whether it be through your policy or whatever it is, then you're not going to see change. You're not going to make anything happen because the community in Australia, I love it, but we can turn extremely quickly if we're unhappy. And I think it's because we've been betrayed so many times and had so many different hardships to deal with, because Australian football is, relative to every other form of the game across the world, we're pretty much just an ongoing guinea pig that has no end. We will continue to be the guinea pig until we evolve into something else. So we are the experiment that will always be an experiment, because we really have nothing to compare ourselves to. We're experimenting on ourselves. And for a footballing community, that's really, really tough. You know, it's really hard, because if we try to make comparisons to other countries and how we should be running this game, but when you're trying to do that, there's really no one else out there. You know, we can be like, oh, compare it to the US, but that's a completely different beast. Compare it to Europe, not the same thing. So I think for the people running the game and for, you know, Craig Foster, who was looking to be the one running the game, it's an extremely, extremely difficult job. But I think if you can have the community behind you, like I said, whether that be through charisma or policy or whatever, it makes it a lot easier. And now, like you said, we're relatively happy with James Johnson. And if he can continue to do fantastic things like bring the Women's World Cup to Australia and be a footballing person, then we'll continue to be happy. But if something goes wrong, we'll turn on him just as we've turned on everyone else. And I think that's a detriment to our own existence as a footballing community that will just instantly turn on someone when we're not happy.
But we've also been hurt too many times before.
So many times, so, Josh.
I mean, look, I felt at the time when those elections were happening that such was the ineptness and stagnation at FFA HQ under Stephen Lowy as chairman and David Gallop as CEO. I felt we needed a firebrand to really come in and shake things up. You know, a footballing Bernie Sanders, as you say, Ed.
Yes.
And for all of his positive qualities, you know, Chris Nicu is not that. You know, he's much more of a conciliator behind the scenes. And maybe he'll get more done as a result. But, you know, I felt we needed someone to really stand up for the game in the press and give a convincing account of ourselves, which, you know, David Gallop and Stephen Lowy simply were not doing. It was kind of pathetic how they caved to other sports and other interests at all times. So I'm glad for where we're at the moment. I think James Johnson can be a potentially unifying figure. I mean, we always talk about uniting the tribes. I'm not quite sure what that means because there are so many conflicting interests in Australian football when it comes to all levels of the game. But I think, you know, he is someone who's been reaching out behind the scenes and has maybe a chance to reunite the two most broken strands, which are the old NSL clubs and the NPL clubs and the professional level of the game currently. So I really hope that happens, but I will always wonder what it would have been like if Craig Foster had been elected to that board. Ed, we should talk about the other high-profile departure over the last few days, and that's just broken today in the Sydney Morning Herald. Vince Rigari, as usual, breaking the news. He's one of the only reporters left, so it's just as well he's a good one. And it's that Robbie Fowler will not return to see out the season with Brisbane Roar. He's been lukewarm in the UK press. We actually raised it last week as a possibility that he wouldn't come back. And he was making some comments in the UK media saying they haven't arranged a flight for me. I don't know what's going on. He seemed to want to go back, but he didn't know whether there was the will from the ownership to bring him back. The ownership, Chris Fong, the sort of backer group spokesperson, has blamed coronavirus for... You know, the world's changed. We never expected this. It's a shame because the way we were building was beautiful, Fong told the Herald. I think that's an excuse. I think they've just decided to cheap out on it in the wake of COVID. Maybe that's had an impact. But I don't think it's the reason for it. I think they've just decided they don't want to pay a marquee coach, which is what Fowler is. Marquee you know, he's coach. Undoubtedly pretty healthy wages and also get him a, you know, charter flight back to Australia. Along with his right-hand man, Tony Grant. So they've both sort of mutually terminated, as is the way of A-League contracts at playing and coaching level most of the time. And it will be the perennial interim, Darren Davies, and the academy boss, Warren Moon, who will be taking over in the interim. And Chris Fong from the Baku Group has declared that the Roar's next manager will be an Australian. So your reaction, Ed?
I mean, I've always been a fan of Robbie Fowler from a Brisbane Roar perspective. I think he got a bad rap at the start of the season, justifiably so, because of how bad the defense was and how bad the team appeared to be playing. But I think he had a plan, and I think we kind of saw it come together towards the end of the season. You know, they were going to make finals. And I think with the football that they play and with the experience that they have around that side, you know, we talk about the fact that he's brought in a whole bunch of dying championship players. And I think they could have made a little bit of noise in the finals.
Let's be honest, League One players.
They could have done something. So I think it's a shame that whatever's happened has happened. I think you're right in the sense that they're blaming the pandemic. And they're using it as an excuse. I think it would have been difficult for Robbie Fowler, you know, leaving his family over there and coming back and having to spend the 14 days in quarantine on his own, not kind of... If I was in his situation and I wasn't receiving 100% support from my football club, I would probably do the same. If I'm being honest, if they're not putting in the effort, if they're not sending the message that they want me there 100%, then why would I bother? Why would I put in the effort? He's probably going to get a payout, I'm assuming. So I think fair play to Robbie Fowler. He can stay home. He can enjoy his time over there and be with his family. I don't think he needs to come back for Brisbane Roar to have the impact that they will inevitably have in the finals, whether it actually happens or doesn't. I think they already have a plan in place and they'll play that plan out for the rest of the season. But again, it is a shame because I do like Robbie Fowler. He is God after all, Josh.
And God is not coming back to us, unfortunately. No. Well, look, I've been as critical of Robbie Fowler's playing style as any. The defense looked a little bit ropey early on in the season when they were getting torn apart on the break by Victory, who couldn't finish their chances. There were a few games there where I thought this thing isn't working. It's a sort of dead possession followed by terrible transition defense. But he did really tighten up the defensive line over the course of the season. When you compare it to the last campaign, it is stark. And they've got one of the best three defensive records in the league as compared to last season. It was the attacking game plan that I didn't trust. I thought they were too reliant on crosses. The possession play was just too slow and too backwards and sideways for my taste. I didn't feel they were really progressing the ball or breaking lines very often, and most of their goals did come when there was space in transition or from sort of desperate flings into the box. So I thought there was a lot of evolution to go there, but you look at the table from the 2018-19 season, 18 points from 27 games, negative 33 goal difference, oof, 71 goals conceded, versus this season where they've only played 22 games and they've almost doubled their points tally to 35. They've only conceded 24 goals. They've got a meager goal difference of plus one, but compared to negative 33, I think it's safe to say there has been improvement there. I don't know if they were going to hit a ceiling in terms of their style of play where they, you know, couldn't really get past a kind of lower finals place, I suppose, and they would be like hard to break down, but, you know, never particularly a great threat going forward. I wonder whether they were going to hit that ceiling soon, but they're in fourth place. Versus games second hand. last season. A couple of games for the teams below them in hand, so Perth could have overtaken them. But I think Robbie Fowler did a good job, and he did a good enough job at least for them to absolutely keep him on. And I think this has been a money-saving decision, as it so often is with the backroom group, who haven't really been committing the resources they initially promised to Brisbane Roar when they took over. They've really not done that. So I think this is another in a long line of financially motivated decisions that doesn't benefit the team on the field. But I will put one notable caveat there and say that I think Warren Moon is a potential future head coach. They've got him in as one of the two kind of assistant interims in there. I don't know who's in charge and who's assistant, or maybe co-managers. I'm not sure what's going on there with Darren Davies and Warren Moon, but I think those responsibilities will be delineated soon. But I was calling for him to get the head coaching role before Fowler came in. I thought they should hire a local coach, a Queensland boy. Warren Moon is certainly that, and he's done brilliantly in NPL Queensland. They instead brought him in to run the academy for a while, but I think they've already got the guy for the future on their payroll based on his record in NPL. And I think the fans will get behind him as well because he is a Queensland boy, and I like that. That local side of things in the A-League, I think more Australian coaches and more, you know, rookie head coaches need to be given a chance for us to find the diamonds in the rough. And I think Warren Moon could be that. So there could yet be a positive out of this, cheapskate policy. Well, I'll say what it is.
Do you think this maybe paints a picture for what Brisbane Roar's intentions were this season and maybe for the season after? I think the fact that Robbie Fowler was obviously a foreign manager, I don't think, even pre-COVID, I don't think he was seen as the future of the club. I don't think he was going to be here for 3 or 4 years. I think it was either one and done or maybe two. And they were probably just looking to maybe bring a little bit of popularity back to Brisbane Roar, maybe make a finals appearance and then see him off. And then, as you said, bring in one of his understudies who has studied the way that he's managed and coached, and then he can lead the charge and be the Queenslander that all Brisbane Roar fans want their manager to be. So I think it maybe just shows that Brisbane Roar's plans weren't long term. But I think if they were gonna make a change, this is the right time to do it. I think it works for both parties. I think it's disappointing from a footballing perspective, but from a lifestyle perspective and from an economic perspective, it does make sense. And it maybe gives a chance for the new managers to make a difference without too much pressure, if that makes sense.
Potentially. I'm not sure how this works with their kind of evolution as a football team. I think the Brisbane Roar fans, some of them are on the side because the results have been undoubtedly better. Some of them aren't because it is not the style of football they're accustomed to from the Ange years.
Roar Salona.
That's how they see their identity. A lot of those Ange fans.
They got to let it go.
Well, maybe they don't. Maybe they can try and recapture that with a more progressive playing style. I don't think it's ever going to be as successful as when Ange was in charge with the record-breaking unbeaten run in Australian sport and two championships and et cetera and so on. But I think they could maybe capture it stylistically and be an upper mid-table side playing good, positive football. I wonder if the defensive improvements are directly at the expense of their attacking game plan. If they try and play a more attacking style of play, maybe the defensive improvements will crumble. And I do wonder whether a lot of those UK guys that they brought in, that Fowler was clearly the architect behind, will stick around beyond next season. I think some of them have been a mixed bag. Amadi Holloway hasn't really worked out. You know, Roy O'Donovan's already gone. There were a few outstanding pickups. Tom Aldred is club captain and centre back, and Jay O'Shea has been very good. So I hope they keep a hold of those two as visas. But I do wonder how this fits in their kind of planning and trajectory. I feel like it's a bit of a short-sighted move, and they may regress given the instability at the top. And I don't think the next coach is going to coach like Robbie Fowler or necessarily build on what he's done. So I think they could be, you know, going backwards before they go forwards, unfortunately. So, yeah, I'm not entirely confident in the short-term future of Brisbane Roar. And that's all down to the ownership, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I think a fish rots from its head down, Josh.
A lot of animal metaphors today.
Yes. I mean, look, I don't think there's a smelly fish in Brisbane Roar just yet. But the fish has been caught and it's time for it to be eaten before it gets rotten. I don't know how that metaphor works in it from a footballing perspective, but what I'm saying is they have to look positively before they start, you know, making negatively charged changes, if that makes sense.
Well, Ed, I know we're fast running out of time, so we should get on to Europe before you have to go and we have to sign off. Now, what would you like to start with? I think the biggest storyline from the weekend is the lead change in La Liga. Real Madrid, I think, were ahead on head-to-head record going into the weekend, but they've cleared Barcelona by 2 points after Barca were held to a 2-2 draw at Balaidos by Celta Vigo, their perennial bogey team, and Real Madrid got the job done 1-0 away from home at Espanyol, with Casemiro, of all people, scoring the winner after a crafty countering Benzema back heel. So what is going on at Barcelona? They took the lead twice through the returning Luis Suarez, but goals from Fyodor Smolov and a late free kick from Liverpool reject and La Liga hero Iago Aspas gave Celta Vigo a draw and knocked Barcelona off their perch.
I'll never forget Iago Aspas in that corner against Chelsea. That's my last living memory
of that man. That's so unfair. He's such a good player.
He was so good before he came to Liverpool, and he's been so good after he left Liverpool. But he was very bad. Very, very bad at Liverpool. He wasn't that great.
He barely got an opportunity. I think it's unfair. He's a very good player, and his record in Spain proves that. And he's a Spanish national team caliber player.
Yeah, he's objectively an excellent footballer. In terms of Barcelona, we talked about Barcelona on the Friday show, and maybe from a more macro level, how the running of the club has deteriorated over the last few years, especially with the players that they brought in. they haven't really made a signing that has they haven't made a signing where the player becomes better at Barcelona, probably for three or four seasons, I would say. Coutinho was a big floppy. Dembele has been a bust, let's be real. And with those two players, that's like £250 million worth of player. Think about the players you can buy with that money, Josh. And if you're spending that type of money and you're not getting any return, then there's got to be something in question when it comes to the transfer policy. This season, I think it's been difficult in La Liga to kind of like the teams in Spain aren't as dominant as they used to be. So when we see Barcelona lose 5 games and draw 6 games, we think, what's going on? This is catastrophe. This is no good. I think just the reality of the situation is Spanish football just isn't as good at the moment as we're used to it being. You know, obviously Real Madrid, they won 3 Champions Leagues in a row. So they're doing okay from a European perspective. But for Barcelona, it's kind of been, they've just kind of existed without being the best team in the world, I think, for quite some time.
Yeah, look, I think they've let Messi down at board level and at recruitment level. They really did not. They got 222 million euros from the Neymar deal.
Yeah.
And they spent all of that on Felipe Coutinho, who's already left on loan.
He's the James Rodriguez of Barcelona.
I mean, you know, how much did they spend on him? 145 million euros.
About 150. And I think even from a Liverpool perspective, we were like, what is going on here? This type of money for...
Liverpool actually improved on the back of his departure.
But Klopp knew that the whole time.
Because Felipe can run for 5 minutes before he's puffed out. He's a brilliant little technical player, but he can't. Yeah. He cannot gegenpress to save his life.
I can imagine he can speak fluent English except for the word press. Press? I don't know. Sorry.
Press what?
Press.
I don't know if that's a Brazilian accent. I don't think it is. It was Mane Dembele for 125 million euros. Oh. And that's already... They've already spent the Neymar money and then some. Like that was the disaster, that transfer window where they panic bought 2 players who just haven't worked out. Dembele, I still have some hope for. He's had a lot of injury problems, unfortunately, and I think he was a bit more raw than they kind of anticipated. The next transfer window, their most expensive acquisition was Malcolm from Bordeaux, who I think he was about to join Roma, and I think that would have been a better move for him. But I think Barcelona was too much too soon, and he's already left for Zenit St. Petersburg. They did actually almost recoup all of their money on that deal, surprisingly.
Well, that's just Zenit being Zenit, or Russian football being Russian
and
football.
And their latest splashes have been Antoine Griezmann and Frenkie de Jong, of course, at a combined value of more than 200 million euros. And Griezmann is sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
And they haven't found a way to really incorporate Frenkie de Jong. I think he's only... I mean, I think he has the Barcelona DNA, and I think he could be a really good player for them in the future. He's still very young. But he doesn't work alongside another holding midfield player. He needs to be the 6, and he needs to have players ahead of him who are, you know, kind of box-to-box players who can press the ball and do defensive work in front of him. He's a very unique footballer, and he was in a very, very friendly setup at Ajax where the team was kind of built around him in that number 6 role, where he gets the ball as the deepest player and then he can dribble past players or play the ball forward with his passing range. He cannot play alongside Sergio Busquets, and he hasn't been able to fit into Barcelona's midfield where there are too many aging players who can't, you know, carry the defensive load for him like he needs. He's a deep playmaking 6, and you know he's a really weird player. He's kind of a register type. He doesn't fit into the mold of a holding midfield player, but he can only play in that position. If he's further forward, then his skills just aren't as applicable. He doesn't have the space to kind of dribble past people when he's not receiving the ball deep. So I think he's just not been utilized correctly. But if they're not going to kind of build the team or the, at least build the midfield around Frankie de Jong, he's not going to be useful for them.
I think he almost reminds me of Steven Gerrard in his later years when he probably had those two seasons where he was playing almost like central defensive midfield, but also like playing quarterback.
Well,
if that makes sense.
Frankie isn't just sending a 60-yard switch ball every time he gets
it. He's not just pinging the ball.
I get what you mean, though. He's kind of a fish out of water, like, but he can only play in that role.
He needs time, and he needs like almost double the amount of time that any other player would need. But when he does have that time, he's one of the best in the world at doing it. But Barcelona, they, like you said, they just need to almost rebuild their midfield. Almost just come up with some other different plan to capitalize on, you know, Messi and Griezmann and the players that they have in their front three, but also not to overshadow the front three, if that makes sense. They need to find a mutually beneficial relationship for their midfield and their front three. And I think Frankie de Jong will probably benefit from that when it comes, but at the moment, like you said, there's nothing really there for him.
Well, I think their front three still needs work, unfortunately. I mean, Luis Suarez can still do a job up front despite his injury issues. If he can get on the park, he's going to score goals. And his connection with Messi is still there. But unfortunately, Griezmann, after they spent just astronomical funds on him as their star of the future, as their Neymar replacement, he's a different player to Neymar. And they kind of have a sort of Dybala-Messi kind of Argentina problem replicated at club level now, when they've got two players who step on each other's toes. Griezmann wants to play centrally, or he wants to play off the right, cutting in. Those are his kind of two positions. And those are Messi's two positions as well.
Yeah.
He can't play as a striker. He needs someone to play off, so he needs to be a kind of second striker or a number 10. We've seen that with France. That's why they keep starting Olivier Giroud, even though he sort of looks out of place compared to the quality around him, is because he complements Griezmann. Messi is a player who always wants to come and receive the ball, get the ball to his feet and make something happen. That's Griezmann's role as well, and it was at Atletico Madrid, and now he's being asked to play off the left as a left footer, so he either has to play as a traditional winger or kind of come inside next to Suarez, but then it clogs up the space. They want him to run behind the defence so that they create space for the players who want to come short and receive the ball, but that's not Griezmann's natural instinct, so I don't know if him and Messi can coexist. I really don't. I don't think they've found a solution. Maybe, just maybe, if they went to a back three and played a kind of 3-4-3 system where the wingers can sit in a little bit narrower and not crowd the middle of the field, then they could accommodate both Griezmann and Messi. But I just don't see it at the moment. And that's why he's getting benched every week. That's why they've got 120 million euros worth of footballers sitting on the pine while Ansu Fati starts.
I mean, Ansu Fati is one of my favorite, both names and players.
I mean, I think he complements Suarez and Messi much better
than
Griezmann
does.
Yeah,
that's the thing. But I think it almost comes down to, why are Barcelona buying these players? Are they assuming that they can just change straight away and that they will become the player that Barcelona needs them to be? Or are they just not scouting them enough? We've all seen Antoine Griezmann play. We know how it works. And we know, like you said, that he needs Giroud and he needs a complementary piece. Not every player can complement each other. You know, Messi isn't going to be the type of player who's going to play a support role. Same goes for Suarez. You need role players to complement your stars because that's what makes them stars.
Yeah, I agree. And I think they've got problems in the back line as well. There's problems all over the field in terms of fit for Barcelona. But we're judging them to a higher standard than other clubs because they're supposed to be competing for the Champions League every year.
Yeah, it's because they're Barcelona. They should be up there competing every single year.
I don't know if you saw Nelson Semedo's positioning for Celta Vigo's first equaliser, but it was just, he was about 8 to 10 yards behind the rest of his back line. Dawdling, whistling. I don't know what he was doing, but he just had no clue about the offside line they were playing. He's a pretty good attacking right back, but he's no defensive instincts whatsoever. And I don't think he was ever really Barcelona caliber. But they keep spending big money on players who just aren't quite good enough. I think Piqué has got some creaking legs and he needs some pace alongside him.
Piqué is like a car from 1975. Like, he looks nice, and it's nice to add
I think he's like a 75 Rolls Royce. Like, it's a beautiful machine, but it needs constant maintenance and someone to dote over it. And, you know, many of his centre-back partners are not that. They're either got injury issues themselves. I think Umtiti is not necessarily a bad
He's a scapegoat. He gets a bad rap.
I think he, you know, defenders often live or die on the protection given by their midfield, and I think that's probably the case with the centre-back pairing at the moment. And their goalkeeper, Ter Stegen, I have nothing bad to say about him. He is fantastic. He is amazing, quality. And he's just too exposed time and again. But, you know, I think, the right full-back position is a problem spot for them. They don't really know whether they... who's the nailed-on starter in that role, and I don't think it's Semedo. The midfield, as we said, has structural problems, and the forward line can't seem to accommodate Messi and Griezmann at the same team. So even though Barcelona, they still tick away and they're still going to contend for La Liga titles every season, I just don't think they're putting the team around Messi to be, you know, as successful as they once were, which is a real shame because they're wasting the prime of one of the greatest players of all time.
The greatest player. I mean, when was the last time, growing up and watching football, you look back at Barcelona and you think of how perfectly players like Iniesta, Xavi, David Villa, even Thierry Henry, Samuel Eto'o, they all fit together. They all had their role. They all perfectly meshed together for the greater force that was Barcelona. Now, for whatever reason, they have the players, but they don't mesh together. The players or the people bringing in the players, signing the players, aren't looking at what Barcelona really is, which is a fantastic team. It's not this Barcelona aren't Galacticos. They're not bringing in David Beckham, Ronaldo, like figure. That's not what Barcelona is. Barcelona is tiki-taka. Barcelona is Pep Guardiola. Barcelona is the best team in the world, not the best players. And I think that's almost where they've lost their identity, and they don't know what they're trying to build. I think it's a shame, and I think I'm always wanting someone to step up and really almost take the Barcelona crown off them as the best example of football that we as a human race have to offer.
Well, honestly, you know, I think the pinnacle is Liverpool right now. I mean, I think Real Madrid are playing better than they have, and you know, they're starting to gel again, and they've obviously taken the lead and in the title race, and Zidane, if he hasn't got them humming, but he's got them winning matches, that's part of the battle. But I don't think, you know, they could really compete with Liverpool at the moment. Obviously, Liverpool had a disappointing exit from the Champions League, but. You know,
Josh? You know, who cares?
They got sucker punched by Atletico, but I don't think that's going to be, high on the priority list at the moment. We don't even know if there will be a Champions League this season, so maybe it'll be totally academic.
But I want to see a third, fourth, fifth, and sixth group stage before we get to knockout again for the Champions League. I want there to be something real. Let's bring Western Conferences in. Eastern Conference semis. Let's have a play-in. Let's do something real, real goofy with the Champions League, I reckon. Let's put a big fat asterisk next to it, but let's do something weird.
Okay, I like it.
Yeah, I'd be down for it.
Yeah, all right. Well, I think they need to get creative if they're going to be able to stage it at all. So we'll see. But I just don't see Barcelona competing next time around. Unfortunately for the Champions League title, which is what they want. They've won enough. League titles. They probably won't win the league this season, but I just, without structural changes at kind of board level and in the sporting department in terms of the recruitment strategy, I think it's probably going to take too long to remold this team to get a side that will win a Champions League with Messi. It's a real shame, but you know, they've just got issues all over the park and they're defensively porous. So anyway, Ed, I know we've gone over time and you've got to go, but thank you for stepping into the deputy's shoes today and covering so admirably for the absent Lachie Flanagan on a Monday. And we'll catch up with you soon.
Yes, good to see you, Josh. And I think that we're all excited to get back in the studio. And we're all excited to get back to regular programming, obviously, once... Australian football resumes. But I've enjoyed At Home at FNR. I think it's given us a chance to get a little bit more casual, get a little bit more more relaxed. You know, I'm sitting here in a hoodie.
Yeah, and honestly, jacket. The audience is lucky if I'm wearing pants on any given occasion, because we're just chilling at home after late nights of watching midweek or weekend football. I was certainly up till the wee hours last night, so it's nice to roll out of bed and do a show. But hopefully, we'll be back in the studio before long in a more professional setting.
Absolutely, I'm excited for the. I'm getting quite tired of my stationary microphone. if we're talking studio details, they have. It's got a nice little dolly that you can move around. You can get up and about. That's what I miss. I miss the movement.
Yeah. Well, I think we all need to get out of the house at some point. Hopefully, this second wave in Victoria settles down before long. But stay safe at home. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back with At Home and FNR on Wednesday. We've got the English football show tomorrow. Until then, have a fantastic day in football.
You're listening to At Home with FNR.